What's up, After Buzzers, and welcome to the Magician's After Show. Today we're talking about episode 10, The Girl Who Told Time. And we have a special guest again!
Hello!
Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, After Buzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin!
I'm back in 1996.
It's actually 2000.
I have a theory about that.
No, but she came out of the 1990s, so that sound is very 90s. Yes,
but I like it.
It's good.
You're like, that was a good thing.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, we like the pre-auto-tune days, don't we?
Yes, we do.
What's up, After Buzzers? Welcome to the time. I was going to say time. I'm like, nope.
You got it.
We're talking about time because it's the girl who told time.
The girl
who told the Magician's After Show. My name is Carrie Lane. You can find me online at Carrie D Lane. That's K-A-R-I-D-L-A-N-E. And I just want to give a quick shout out to Espionage Cosmetics for these lovely nails. And I'll post pictures of those too. They have like nerdy, nerdy makeup and nail wraps.
Nice. Oh,
and I got an awesome guest right here to my left.
I don't have nails from
you do have nails.
Espionage. Espionage?
Yeah, Espionage.
It's my loss, obviously. I'm Joshua Butler. I directed the episode. Oh, you can find me on Twitter at the Joshua Butler.
In our regular panel. Yeah.
What's up, y'all? My name is Ty Matthews. Y'all can find me on all forms of social media at Ty Matthews PMA.
Hi, I'm Adrian Snow. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm Adrian Snow. And my theory is that every decade bleeds into the other decade by 5 years. So if you watch a movie from 2005 or music from 2005, it still sounds like the 90s. That's it.
Interesting.
And there's artists that just genuinely never change their sound.
That's
you know, and have no interest in updating their...
They're like, I'm going to sound like this to the day. That's
it, yeah.
And that's fine, too.
That's fine.
Yeah, you know.
Thank you. Chantal Kirby has like a fine Canadian singer, by the way.
Nice.
Yes. I love it.
Since we shoot the show in... Canada.
Yeah.
It's fitting.
Fitting.
And then Joelle is unfortunately sick, but we're happy to have a guest. So, yay!
I get to not be on the couch.
Yeah, you're going to join us at the table.
As comfortable as that couch is.
Yeah, no, it's a lovely couch.
It's comfortable. But then you're like, can you hear me?
Sorry, Joelle. No, feel better, Joelle. We'll miss you.
Oh, yeah.
So, any quick thoughts at the top of this? Episode.
Oh man, there's always so much that happens.
This is true. Like, a lot that happened this episode.
I know last week we had what, like three simultaneous kind of stories falling along, didn't we? Or no, did we? There's always.
I feel we always.
And
do.
That's
this
true.
Show.
That is true. That is true. There's always so much. It's hard to encapsulate your reactions. But I love Josh. I love the character of Josh. I love seeing more.
He's like, thanks.
He's exactly right. Yeah, I love this Josh.
Yeah. Well, trust me, on set it was confusing. Yeah. Trevor Einhorn, who plays Josh, fantastic actor, by the way.
I love that he keeps popping up.
Yeah. He's a sweet guy, and he's so good. Yeah.
It's like a good comedic relief of like, oh yeah, I am. And familiarity, because it's like a classmate that you're like, you see them every so often.
Yeah.
Right.
That guy.
We saw Josh. We saw Todd.
Yes.
And Todd. Yeah.
I think we talked about that a little bit earlier in the season, how it's nice that a lot of the season one characters have returned, because that's realistic that they would be in college together, that you'd see the same people versus, you know, you watch a show, you see them season one, you never see those people ever again.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, because they're expensive to keep hiring these same actors over and over again, but, you know.
Yeah.
But it's all good.
It pays off in the long run.
It does. No, it's good. Glad you noticed.
Yeah, it builds the world better for us.
I totally agree.
Yeah. Right, 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 right.
So, what did you guys think of the opening when we have Dean Fogg testing Julia at Break Bills? And you're like, wait a minute.
Explained so much about Julia's tracking or a storyline last season. You understand that's just who she is.
Yes.
So, even though I know I was the first person to be like, Julia's getting on my nerves, like, figure it out. But I really appreciate that kind of answered why she was so determined to have magic in her life, because that's just like built into her, regardless of what, you know, timeline or loop they're in.
She's a knowledge student.
Exactly.
I like that's like a category.
Yeah.
It's kind of, it's like, I feel like, I don't know, and as I was watching it, I felt like the knowledge students, because I don't think we had really heard that much about knowledge students before, but I'm like, oh, like, you could kind of compare those, like, they're sort of like the Gryffindor of Break Bills, like, they're kind of the most...
Ravenclaw.
Do you think?
Ravenclaw's the intelligence, and Gryffindor is the adventure.
I thought Gryffindor, because it seemed like they were a little more well-rounded, like they're kind of sort of like the best of both worlds.
I buy that.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
A Gryffindor.
Oh, there you go. Yes. There
Griffin
you go.
Claw.
Exactly.
Yeah, I was going to say they're the AP students.
I could see that. Sure.
Sure. Yeah.
Honor kids.
But we have one of the things that I've brought up a lot is this idea of like seeing all these different versions of these characters. We've seen mm-hmm. golems, and we've seen mm-hmm. like doppelgangers, and we've seen dream versions mm-hmm. of characters, mm-hmm. and back to the version of Penny that we saw during the musical sequence in the first season.
Yes, yeah. The imagination of Quentin.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
The version of Penny. Yeah.
And so it was interesting seeing like. This timeline, you could tell like immediately, like, oh, we're somewhere else. Obviously, yeah. Dean Fogg mm-hmm. can see, and Julia is much kind of more, you know, bright and sort of bubbly. Like, I wanted to know, like, what are some of the challenges of shooting these different kinds of realities?
Well, that was the number one challenge, was were people going to get it, you know, yeah. and how subtle can we be? How much do you need to telegraph that this is a different timeline, mm-hmm. you know, or is it just going to context clues with Fogg seeing and Julia, mm-hmm. you know, with her shade and, you know, and obviously doing well in school as opposed mm-hmm. to getting thrown out. So we were just hoping that by the time you saw it, you didn't need like overly hit over your head kind mm-hmm. of exposition.
Right.
Which I'm happy to hear we didn't seem to need.
Yeah. Because
you kind of got it.
You go, wait a minute.
Yeah, okay, good.
It was cool. It was a moment where you go, wait, what's going on? But then you go, oh, this is an alternate.
Good, right. Good, because I was just, as a director, I was just constantly questioning, do I need to do more to mm-hmm. telegraph this? But
yeah.
But I felt okay. Like even if we didn't see Fogg like without his glasses or anything like mm-hmm. that, it looked different and it looked kind of warmer and happier.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and Ellie Smokin, the DP, and I, we talked about that, and he's unbelievable. And, you know, shout out. I guess you saw him a couple weeks ago.
Yeah,
he did.
Yeah,
he's right where you're sitting.
Yeah, he's fantastic, and I love working with him. But he's, yeah, I mean, we talked very specifically about, you know, because he's got the very specific looks for mm-hmm. the current mm-hmm. incarnation of Fillory and the current mm-hmm. incarnation of New York City and Breakbills, and they're all different kinds of tones and palettes. So the idea was. Oh, you did? Okay, well, there you go.
Definitely.
I'm repeating information.
No,
go watch. That was it, episode 8?
AfterBuzz
show, and you'll
after
learn.
This one, obviously.
Yeah, I'll shut up about it.
Well,
but very much so. Like, the look of it, the feel mm-hmm. of it, the acting style, you know, talking to Rick and Stella about how we could differentiate it, again, without... Mm-hmm. And Sarah and John, the showrunners, fantastic. They're always erring on the side of subtlety, yeah. which I think is great. You know?
And she was more Alice-like. That was the first thing I noticed. I was like, oh, Julia is a lot like Alice.
Interesting, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and some of the other loops, because even the how she was dressed, I was like, this is different, because every time we see Julia, she's usually dressed in darker tones. She's usually like mm-hmm. in some type of black or gray, so seeing her in like a nice little preppy jacket and jeans, I was like, this is not the Julia that we know.
Right, yes. right.
It's kind of like those subtle things did work, because if you watch a show, if you know are a longtime fan, then you're going to pick up on it.
Good, mm-hmm. good, yeah, excellent.
So it's often a challenge for the actors to play the different versions. What was it like directing the different versions? Because there was a lot in this particular episode.
Oh, there was, yeah.
Befores and afters, alternate timelines, and...
Well, the interesting thing is that the alternate timelines, the most intricate... incarnation of it, obviously, was Alice. We called her Alice 23 because we just mm-hmm. picked a timeline, and mm-hmm. Henry Alonzo Myers and Noga Landau, who wrote the script, they were very much like, okay, this is timeline 23, although we don't ever say it, you know.
Right.
That's and you know, working with Olivia and trying to figure out, you know, what is the Alice of that timeline, and mm-hmm. how when things went so wrong in that mm-hmm. timeline, how do you, you know, portray that, and where is she in her journey at this one little point when she ends up at the Tesla Flexion? So, you know, that was tough. Julia, you know, was very much like going back to the pilot, you mm-hmm. know, and the person you met, mm-hmm. you know, when she was still hopeful about getting into Breakbill. So, you know, mm-hmm. so there was a little bit more of a context for her, but with Olivia, it was like almost creating a whole new Alice from nothing. So mm-hmm. which she did a great job doing, but you know, okay. that was the big question of the episode, I thought.
Well, it's cool because those characters are still like a version of them, but just like another, like just a degree.
Well, it's like
different.
It's like a choose your own adventure book, and yeah. you know, that's the way I looked at it. Is you know, you're thinking, okay, there's 40 timelines, and okay, this one, she turned to page 34 instead of 48, so, you know.
And she lost a handful of fingers.
Yeah, and, you know, and everything went bad, and everyone died, and she couldn't find Quentin's shade, and it was like, oh, man, and she was still dressed in the clothes that, you know, that you know, she when she was loving Quentin, you know, that was part of his outfit, so
oh,
it was
wow.
like, we went down that road, you know, we were like, okay, this is, she's holding on.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Aww. A couple of people in the chat were bringing up a pretty good question of This episode kind of showed us maybe why Dean Fogg likes Julia more, because that episode where she came running from Renard and, like, Marina, they're like, screw you, you can't come in. But, like, Julia, he has this moment with her of, like, I'm just, we're the same kind of student. So was that part of the directing in it at all, or was that thought
I think
out?
That's really good screenwriting, because, and again, I'll shout out to Henry and Noga for that, because what we're trying to do in the beginning, of course, is set up the moment where Julia remembers the Teslaflexion, you know, so by reminding the audience of the Julia that used to be, you know, and then have that be the callback, I think that was that was the reason for it.
Nice. So then we have the, nope, Julia's still in her prison, but she gets released because Dean's like, this isn't a prison, so go away. And then fun fillery, all the wedding prep, and I love that it was Groomzilla. That was very amazing.
Yes, that's what we call it.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense that Elliot would treat this as kind of momentously as he is.
Yes. And then poor Quentin's pretty much drunk in despair, and it's been 3 months, which was a nice moment, because we've talked about how this show sometimes were a little, it's maybe not super clear, like, how long it's been, so that was a nice, like, oh, it's been 3 months. Okay, cool.
And I think, I'm not sure if we had ever nailed down the exact ratio of, like,
3 months,
time in fillery
days
versus time in time on Earth. Yeah.
Not exactly.
So that was good to kind of get more of an idea of, how much time has passed in each of the realms.
Yes.
So maybe it's been, like, 2 months total on Earth, and
it sounds, what it sounds like is, it sounds like maybe a month, a day on Earth is a month in fillery, or around that.
That's about the equation that we worked with. That's pretty much close to it. Yeah.
This is kind of a sad, but I probably kind of true. Renji in the chat says, I guess Q and Alice were destined to be apart, because there's been multiple timelines where they've been broken up, so it's like, aww.
Yeah.
That can't be all of them, though.
Well, you know, there's many more timelines you don't know about.
Sure.
You've only seen a very small sample of those timelines.
Do we get to see more
timelines? There's not only 39 timelines, necessarily.
There's only 40. Yeah, they only did
the
loop.
It 39 times. They're on 40.
There's only a total of 40 loops.
Right, but so far, yeah.
But did you see the face he made when I asked this? Do we get to see other timelines? He's like,
I don't know. I actually honestly don't know.
You're like, no, this is my poker face. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd love to. It's a great device. I mean, and
it'd be fun to see other versions.
I'm sure that, you know, I mean, it would be a great device in the series to, you know, especially season 3, please.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, it'd be great if they continue down that road, because there's so many possibilities dramatically, I think.
Well, then, pointed out by Dragon Artist, says, and they're all dead in all of them, though technically in all the other timelines they did die by the beast.
Right,
so.
Right.
Right, just
maybe
a different
them before they died.
Points,
yeah.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
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 And different people survived each time? Yeah. I don't know, yeah.
Then we have... gotta love the moment, and I love with Margot when she's venting her frustration that she needs some alone time.
Mm-hmm.
I love
of
that
course.
Line.
Yeah.
She's like, I need a hot bath and rub one out. And I was like, yes. I love
right.
So glad they like said that.
And that was in the script. I actually want to make a shout out to Hale Appelman, who is one of the great improvisers on the show. And I just happen to love that improvised moment where he says, you're banished forever. I don't know if you caught that.
Yeah.
I just, that makes me laugh every time. On set. And honestly, we, you know, had we had more than 40 minutes to I mean, there was like another 2 minutes to that scene where Hale was just going, like, we had all these people bringing him wedding preparation things, and he was riffing off of all of them.
Yeah.
And it was just
bonus
just
features later.
Hysterical.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
He's
right.
Been getting so many good one-liners these last couple episodes, especially.
Yeah, but that was a Hale improv that just was phenomenal.
Then we have Elliot with Baylor, and they're talking about the polling spell, and his approval ratings are kind of shitty, and and versus having a public and private ceremony. What a mundane, like, but realistic thing to have a conversation about.
Yeah, he's trying to curry favor, absolutely.
Yeah.
It was interesting, though, we get back to Penny and Katie, and Penny's like, I just want to help. But right away gets pulled into the order. Because, of course, the library's the fastest on the thing you don't want.
Right. Yeah, they've kind of... I like how they're talking about, you know, the fact that Penny is, you know... He doesn't know when they're going to call in that...
Yeah.
His first day of work, basically.
So not today.
And then, of course, as soon
of
as they talk
today.
About it, he jinxes it.
Yeah. Yes.
Of course.
Then we jump over to when we get to see Josh with the drug bake sale. Yay. Right. Now, were those all written in the script that way, of the different ones of what they give you?
They were. They were. Henry, Lonzo Myers, and Nogalenda. Yeah, no, that was, yeah, there was no improv in that scene. That was on the page. And the key was to make sure we got the right pastries, because we wanted it to be upscale. A bake sale, you know.
They're very kind of fancy.
Yeah. They're all fancy. Yeah, we didn't want to do the normal pot brownies, you know. You just, you know, you kind of, because obviously all these drugs were going to go to wonderfully different places. One of them we actually see the effects of. But, yeah, so that was the fun part of, like, figuring out, you know, what do we, you know, the tarts and the tartines and all those, you know, fancy schmancy desserts.
Edibles are so high class now anyway.
Yeah. And, of course, Josh being a foodie, and I certainly am one as well in real life. So, like, it was fun to figure out what the foodie would have done, you know, with his, his, you know, various drugs.
Sure. And he takes the effects of what they do as seriously as he takes, you know, say the plating or the,
it's like the wine
flavor.
It's like a wine pairing. Right. You know, it's like, you know, this drug and this pastry go really, really well together.
This one will make it feel like rainbows are blowing.
For people who aren't in a legal state like we are, you know, the experience of going to a place where they take pride in their drugs.
Yes.
in their marijuana is fascinating, because that's not how I think a good amount of the United States really experiences, or for that matter, the world experiences drugs. So to have people talk about, well, this strain of OG Kush is like this, is very fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, my Colorado friends are really, you know, getting very, you know, into that sort of the pot sommeliers or whatever they're calling themselves. I don't know. There's probably a word for
it.
Pot
sommeliers. I'm sure there is. Is it sativa? Is it a hybrid?
Yeah, exactly. Sure. And everyone's getting very snobby about it.
Yeah.
But it's the new, pot is the new wine. Yeah.
There you go.
I was going to say, this feels like a whole rabbit trail that we can keep talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Let's go. We want to know. Yeah. Obama Kush, it's great.
But that speaking of drugs,
like Kush. I want the Kush he was on.
Yeah.
Or white Obama Kush, like the guy we were talking about last week.
What?
Renard's son.
We'll
we were talking to Joel. Joel made a comparison that Renard's son was very much a white Obama.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
So Obama keeps coming up.
Okay.
Obama's the Taylor Swift of season two.
Oh. So we get the drugs do take you somewhere else.
I'm not over it. Not over it.
Never.
No. But we get to meet 12-year-old Julia
Shane. We could have changed the Constitution. 3 terms. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Sorry.
That close.
We've just lost all of our
Trump
supporters.
A couple of our viewers
I know.
Thumbs down.
Exactly.
I don't know. If you're watching this show, you know.
We just had a whole conversation about marijuana.
You know.
Yes.
All right. Hey, but you know what? Dragon Artist, thank you in the chat room. To quote the trailers, magic is a drug. So. You know,
there you go.
Yes, very good. And everyone asks me about, you know, who hasn't seen The Magicians. I always say it's sex, drugs, and magic. That's what I call it.
God, that's such a good
boom.
It is.
That's what it is. I'm tired of the adult Harry Potter.
No.
It's not really that. No,
right.
It's sex,
so
drugs.
So you want that quote on the box and be like asterisk me like. You know, made.
I will take credit for that. I should have trademarked
that.
But
yeah,
sex, drugs, and magic.
I love that.
Hashtag, thank you, Renji. Hashtag weed connoisseur. There you go.
Sure.
So,
that's
if you guys haven't noticed, we do have a live chat on this show, so feel free to chime in with us. We love talking to you all. And if you are watching this later, comment down below on your thoughts on the episode and predictions.
Maybe somebody out there knows if there's a pot sommelier name. Like
leave that.
There's
in gotta the
be a solid,
there's gotta be a name,
a solid,
for this,
like,
right?
Portmanteau out there.
Yeah, like what do they call in the people in Colorado that give you, you know, the?
I think they're. I can't think. Well, the dispensary.
Okay, somebody out there.
We'll talk about it.
Tell us in the chat. Yeah.
Gotta be. So, what do you guys think that was a 12-year-old Julia to represent her shade?
I had never thought about a shade being represented kind of so literally, but it's interesting that Quentin kind of had to be on this in this altered state in order to come face to face with her.
Well, it makes sense for it to be a child in terms of innocence and purity. So, but I'm like, I like that it wasn't like a 5-year-old or something. Like 12 is like just before that.
It's right before you lose your mind.
Pretty much.
Yeah,
pretty
more or less.
right.
Still kind
early
of like
stages of puberty.
Childlike innocence, but you're about to start venturing into more adult aspects of living.
But then Quentin, because he learns about that, he's like, Elliot, no, I gotta bounce. And But poor Fenn, she's like, that's my job. When Elliot's like, so here's all these things we gotta do. Mm. And she's like, yeah, well, that's my job.
It's so heartbreaking that it keeps going back to that. Like, that's this recurring motif with her. It's like, that's my job. That's what I'm here for. That's my duty. It's like,
I just want to know if she actually likes it.
I think she likes him. Yeah. I think she likes him. But, like, all of this other stuff she feels so resigned to. Mm-hmm.
It's life in Fillory.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's that's the way of the land. Mm-hmm. You know, you can do what you know.
I think, I'm not sure. I think she said something about how, being surprised that he's not used to
three-person marriage.
That's what I'm referring to.
That's
if you grow up in a place like that, maybe that's the way you are. You know, you expect that.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a part of her that prefer that he, you know, sexually attracted to her the same way he's sexually attracted to the king, but
I think he still gives her some form of affection, so she's not totally
but
I still feel bad
for
her.
He's not completely like disregarding her, I still think there's been this kind of undercurrent of almost patronization where he's like, oh, like, aren't you cute, but not really, I don't think really,
but
taking her seriously.
She knows it was an arranged marriage, so
sure.
Yeah.
But that doesn't, I think there's still very genuine feelings for him on her part.
Like, when I was 18, I approached a man who ended up being gay. And when I realized he was gay, I went, oh. And he booped me on the nose. Like, I'm cute. And I was like, ah. Because, you know, I'm learning to be like a woman and stuff. So it's kind of like that. Like, I appreciate that he wasn't mean to me, but it's still like he booped me on the nose. Like, like a little cute cat.
Another good hashtag, Renji. Thank you. Hashtag the city of pixels.
Those are cities
made out of pixels?
Close. That was definitely that's a Henry Alonso Myers classic.
That was so good.
Yeah, you know, and he also wrote the first episode of The Magicians that I directed last season, Homecoming, the Alice Quentin going home to mom and dad stuff.
Yes, love that one.
Yeah, it was a fun episode, but it's like, you know, that's just, for me, that's like, that was a great, like, Henry classic, you know, the city of pixels. And, you know, it's like, but it also just shows, I think, also the difference between growing up in a place like Fillory where the sort of the norms are so different from what we may be used to, and it's just, that's, you know.
Sure. And I think for a line that I think some people might see as like, oh, it's just kind of like just a joke, like, I think there is a part of it that does show that she's trying to learn and she's trying to.
Well, that was the only way. Yeah, I mean, that's, that we discussed it on set. I mean, like she couldn't play it as a joke because she genuinely had wondrous kind of feelings about this magical thing, this internet, Earth thing. Yeah.
Can she come to Earth? We've had a lot of Earthlings go to Fillory. Have any Fillorians go to Earth?
That's a very good question. I don't know the answer to that.
I'm sure there's a way, right?
Because, I mean, like, is it one of those, can you survive?
I'm sure students of Lev's books would probably know this answer.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
But it's a very good question.
If she has the button, right? I guess.
There's a lack of, what's...
Well, it's like an opium in the air in Fillory.
Opium in the air in Fillory.
But, like, would they like
go into withdrawal?
You know?
I don't know.
It's an interesting.
It hasn't come up yet.
Because that would be nice if they could, like, take her there to give her a tour. Well, we did have the son of the... Oh, I'm blanking his name. The other kingdom?
But
the
he's Lorien? From Earth.
Princess?
Oh,
yeah. Princess
so
of
he's
Lorien?
From Earth.
Yeah, he's from Earth.
So we've only had Earthly.
Or his mom. His mom is from Earth, and he was raised on Earth.
He went to boarding school. Yeah.
Right. So can Fillorians go visit Earth? That's a good question.
But he's also not Fillorian.
Right.
Well, yeah, I mean, that. Yeah, we haven't seen in the show
We haven't
yet.
Seen Fillorians.
There's nobody who's done it, I don't think, in the show.
Maybe for sometime later.
I would love to see an episode of Fenn, like...
Come to Earth.
Exploring Earth.
Yeah, right. Fenn in New York.
It would be, like, Enchanted.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
It would be very Enchanted-y. Yeah.
Then we get Katie. How much did you guys love... I love the research tubes when they were doing the, like...
Oh, absolutely.
Thank you.
The librarian.
Brendan Taylor.
That
was phenomenal. Actor. Yeah, I was just texting him before the show.
There's this little moment that he does, and it's barely noticeable, where, like, they're just both waiting for the answer to come, and he looks at her, and he gives her, like, this little, this little motion of, like, isn't this exciting? And it was so funny to
me. I have to tell you, that is the reason why we cast him, because in the audition, we used that scene, and everyone else we saw didn't make make anything out of that moment, but for me, that was the funniest thing in the scene. Right. The moment where you're just standing there and you've got nothing.
Just waiting, yeah.
You got nothing. And so he did that very gesture in the audition. It's like, you, sir,
that
just
made me
elevated
so happy.
The scene.
That and the Fred Fletchen line got
thank you.
Such
was,
a hard
that
laugh
was
out of me.
My favorite line in the script. Fred Fletchen. Read it and I was like, that is the funniest thing
ever. It was such a Jungle Cruise joke. Like, it reminded me of like the Schweitzer Falls kind of joke. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No. What are you talking about?
So on the Jungle Cruise, you go by a mm-hmm. waterfall and they go, oh, there's the famous Schweitzer Falls named for the famous archaeologist Dr. Albert Falls.
What's the Jungle? What's the Jungle Cruise?
At Disneyland.
I've never been to Disneyland.
I didn't realize they had a meta joke at Disneyland. Like, yeah, that's yeah, good. Yeah, that's yeah. good.
Backside of water.
The backside of water, of course, of course, of course.
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, Adrian, we gotta fix
Disneyland.
This.
I've been to Disney World. I don't remember it.
Jungle Cruise is so much fun.
Jungle Cruise is fun.
But Fred Fletcher, yeah. It was such a good line. I laughed out loud with that.
Good, happened. Good. That was absolutely the intention.
I was gonna say, is there a certain persona that you all are trying to guide with the librarians? Because like, I noticed question. That he was very similar to the librarian, other librarian.
The conception of it, you know, because I introduced the library in my first episode, you know, so I was sort of there at the beginning of the Netherlands and sort of all those discussions were that it would be sort of feel like 1950s America.
Mm-hmm,
that's
yeah,
kind of
that's
the
what
conceit.
It feels like even with like the little
yeah, and in fact, bands. we almost couldn't cast Brendan, even though he was the best actor, because he had a beard, and we didn't think that was going to fit into that aesthetic. Mm. But he thankfully agreed to shave for the role. Yeah. So,
You mentioned the audition. Are you there for the audition process for certain episodes?
I'm there for the audition process for all of the guest stars of my episodes.
Oh, okay.
You know, because
that's
obviously
cool.
The cast has been cast.
Yes, mm-hmm.
But I get to be involved in everyone who's you know either appearing in my mm. episode who hasn't been established in the series so far. So, for example, I wasn't involved in casting Josh or Todd.
I see,
but I was involved in casting Howard. So
okay, okay,
that's cool.
And the Shade. Who is also a lovely Vancouver-based young actor. So
right, right, right.
Yeah,
nice.
She was great too. Both of them Vancouver locals.
Nice. Was it more? Was there kind of an element of difficulty to it going into it? Like, okay, we have to find a 12-year-old Julia.
There's never an element of difficulty because there's also a simultaneous casting process going on in L.A.
Oh, okay.
So there's when worst comes to worst. They'll find somebody in LA if we can't
find,
but ideally Vancouver because you know it's better for the budget. And
but I mean, like physically, when you're trying to look for specifically a younger version of someone that's already
on the cast. Oh yes. Oh, you know, we got really lucky that we thought the perfect shade for Julia was a Vancouver based actor. But yeah, no, I mean that was key. I mean, we just were really lucky with her. I thought.
Then we have we find out what Penny's first job of business is: tracking down overdue books, which is sure, I like that.
Right, it was like his little side quest.
Yes.
If this is an open world game, it's his little side quest.
Listen, overdue books can mess up your credit. They can come after you. It's never happened to me, but they can come after you.
Can they mess up
your
credit?
They can mess up your credit if you have enough overdue books. They can
interesting.
Yeah, file against your credit.
Well, that leads us to Harriet over at Fuzzbeat. Which nice.
Yeah, Henry Alonzo Meyer.
That was funny.
No, Miranda.
We were talking about how to pronounce the name. It's Marlee Matlin.
Marlee Matlin.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Amazing.
How was that directing?
Unbelievable. Like a dream come true. Like I was a big fan of her from Children of a Lesser God. I saw when I was growing up.
Just talking
like,
about
I was
that.
Like, have you guys seen
I mean,
this movie?
Yes, it's yes. And
I've
she, you know, she won the Oscar for
that.
It, and you know, so I was a bit like, oh my God, you know, somewhat starstruck, but she's just a lovely human being and was just so great to work with and just, you know, the coolest person. I was just, you know, it was just difficult. But then, and she loved to, you know, collaborate and take direction and was just, it was great. It was like just directing anyone else, even though she has, you know, an amazing resume. So,
and it was, it's such an interesting dichotomy that I think once I thought about it, I was kind of surprised it hadn't come up before. The fact that in this world where magic is done so much by hand, the kind of the parallels with signing and kind of how
well, and actually, that's a very interesting point. That all sort of came out of like Lori, one of our producers, knew Marlee personally and suggested her for the role. And, you know, the role was just written as Harriet, and, you know, we were casting all different types of actors for the role. I mean, there was no specific, you know, one way or the other that we were looking for. Just somebody who would really make Harriet come alive. Mm-hmm. You know, so, and then because she was introduced in this episode, I was involved in that process. So I can say with assurance that when Marley got cast, suddenly Henry did a rewrite over the weekend before we shot with her. And, you know, we kind of added and found all those moments and that you just said, and it just sort of, she fits so well into the world,
right?
You know, and then the idea of Tutting and signing and the link there that came out of casting Marley. So,
and that very first moment where Penny sees her signing, yes, kind of hits the deck because she's not sure what she's doing.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you know, and that was great too. The idea that I love the chemistry between Arjun and Marley and Jade in those scenes. I just think they're so good together. Yeah. And it was like a great comedy team, you know,
right.
And that, I must say, you know, that great best improv ever on any TV show I've ever directed was when Marley just at the end of one take decided, after she gives the book back to Penny after spelling the card, she just, for some reason, she just said "Have a nice day," which wasn't in the script, and without missing a beat. And it's too bad it's censored, but without missing a beat, you know, can I say the F word?
Yeah,
without missing a beat, Arjun says, you know, so it's "Have a nice day," and he goes "Fuck off," and it was just, I was dying at the monitor. It was so funny.
That exchange got such a big laugh out of me when I was more so than I think it was.
But again, just improv from both of them. There's like, whoa, what just happened there? I was genius,
right?
So
that scene also was pointing out how much, like, he's still being so rude all the time.
Yes, exactly.
And you're like, dude, do you not learn that, like, that doesn't work? Like, even Katie was like, it was nice to see her so smiley and, like, happy and, like, seeing her, like, thing. And he's just being a total douchebag.
Right. Yeah, so, like, she banishes him.
Right.
It's like, go away.
Well, it's like you said, like, did you not learn your lesson? Like, this has gotten you in trouble before.
You have to chop off your hand.
But he does love but Penny does apparently have a soft spot for pandas, which is
what did you do to the pandas? Was such a good line.
Exactly. Another Henry classic. Yes.
That was so good. And that scene was just so entertaining to learn also about how the librarians are hiding material, which I wonder that too. As soon as, like, the male librarian was like, "Yeah, we don't have that information." I'm like, oh, dude, he's lying.
Right, absolutely.
I always thought the librarians were sketch from the moment they were introduced. I was like, something is wrong with these people. They're hiding things. Like, they have your entire life history written down. They know all your different names.
But that's open to the public.
Sketch.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm.
Those books aren't hidden, so you could come read your own book. Mm-hmm. She didn't stop them from getting their own book.
Sure.
Right.
So.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But she recommended the don't read to the end because people don't like the ending.
Right.
That was me. I was there.
That was a good one too.
Good times. Good memories. Yes.
Then we have Quentin and Julia. How she's kind of like on autopilot when he comes over to her place and she's talking about, like, "I'm sorry" and the research. And then that's when we get Todd and got the tesselfluxion, which is great. Elliot and the cooking testing was so funny. Right. Like, here, let's eat this different stuff. But it just wasn't working. And
because he wants it to be uniquely Florian.
Yeah.
He wants it to kind of, he wants to meet him halfway. Mm-hmm. Which I think, as much as Fenn is trying to learn, I think it's it's interesting and it's telling of kind of Elliot's arc that he's also trying to grow.
Exactly. Yeah. And we figured that the Florians would just not get Michelin 3-star cuisine.
Exactly.
You know, it's just too foo-foo for them. You know, that
right.
And being a foodie, it's just funny, the whole, we did the sort of knockoff version of Thomas Keller, who's the French Laundry chef, his famous dish, oysters and pearls. So, I mean, for the foodies out there, there was a lot of, like, you know, sort of inside foodie jokes that we're trying to, you know, and even, I think even name checks Keller, but it's like, you know, it's like, filler, be like, just give us a good buffet.
The fact that Josh had to get him wrecked to get
Hardee's.
That
recipe.
Right. Yeah. Hardee's is good,
But then we get the warning in the nachos, and Margot, her good idea of, like, the tracking spell and, like, redo it, and then Josh is going to go invade the Foo Fighters, which seemed to work out really well, but then I was like, that seemed too easy.
Right.
Anybody else?
It seemed, I think I get what you're saying.
Like, well, if we had had a twice the budget, I think the scene that might be missing there is the one where you go see that all play out.
Sure.
I think it's like, that's, unfortunately, in TV, sometimes you don't have the money. If you're doing all the other stuff you're doing, you got to pick your battles.
Right.
And,
exactly.
You know, so obviously, I think all of us would have liked to have seen that.
Well, I think more than anything, it made me suspicious. It made me a little suspicious of Josh. And kind of his intentions.
It was weird.
Like,
He's already betrayed them once, so it's kind of like...
It's true.
Yes.
It's true.
But,
the last little bit with the crazy librarian, too, of, like, the losing control and essentially killing himself to protect the poison room. That was intense.
Trying to hit that kill switch, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And
killed himself.
Mm-hmm.
No, sorry. I'd be like, no, I'm not killing myself.
He is passionate. Librarians are passionate, if nothing else.
This is true. We found that.
Science, okay? Right. I tried to become a librarian until I realized I had to go back to school for library science.
Did you?
And I was I'm not going to do that.
Well,
I don't even understand what library science is.
Yeah.
You know, is it a deep study of the Dewey Decimal system?
Right, you have to, like, figure out the Dewey Decimal and some other stuff. But,
interesting.
Like, I'm not doing that.
But I will point out that the model for that scene was actually... In the last episode I directed, the abortion attempt, you know, where where the demon baby was basically, fighting against having it be removed from Julia. So we went with that idea that there's something in the poison room that is kind of drawing Howard there to, you know, potentially off him, you know, in the same kind of way, that there's a presence. So I like Howard that he fights back, you know, but the idea is that he... wasn't necessarily of his own will protecting the poison room.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Oh, interesting. Okay,
protecting the poison room? So, wait.
Well, when Carrie said that, you know, like, that he was trying to, you know, stop...
That's what I thought,
But the reason he gets into that trance and goes there to begin with, the idea is that there's something going on...
Well, I thought Harriet cursed him and made him want to go open it for Katie.
Right, with the card.
Yeah.
Right,
yes,
right,
exactly.
Right, right.
Yeah. And then he kind of snaps to it and goes, wait, I can't do this, and tries to stop it, and would rather kill himself than open that room.
That's how I was reading it.
Yeah, no, it works both ways.
Interesting.
But the idea would be to also, I don't, you know, I put in the mix that the poison room itself
was kind of pushing
itself.
Would protect itself.
Oh, interesting. I see.
Okay. On top of Harriet's spell with the card, and on
which
top of, you know.
Which explains why he would hit the kill switch over anything else.
And it certainly was triggered by the spell that Harriet cast.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
okay.
But, you know.
That makes more sense when you said it that way. Then we have the... when we get the little bit of Alice, the other Alice, and I was just like, they are wasting their time. Keep getting to the get to the point. I know you love each other.
No, I love that scene. Yeah. I'm not a crier, but I almost cried.
Oh, that 100% got me, for sure.
You have to lose her all over again, but it is one of those, like, I have 2 minutes.
Right.
I need you to tell me information now.
Right.
See, the chemistry between Jason and Olivia is so great, and especially in that scene when you see, like, he is the version that lost her, and she's the version that lost him. And so they get to see each other that one moment, and it's just really beautiful for them to share in that pain, because, like, nobody else is going to really understand the pain they're going through specifically for each other. So.
And that shot at the very end of that exchange with all the sparks, and then you just see two shadows become one. Oh, my God.
Yeah, that was
gorgeous shot.
The first thing I thought of when I read the script, I was like, we got to do that shot.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, and I think what you're saying is so true. That is the balancing act, you know, is when you direct a show or anything. When you direct anything, it's like, you know, how do you balance in that scene the tension of the fact that they have a 2-minute time limit, you know, with the tutting going on outside, you know, can Julia and Fogg keep it up, you know, while there's this incredibly emotional scene that you want to stay in with Jason and Olivia, who are doing amazing work. So it's like, you know, balancing that is really a big question.
I thought it was excellently done, because I watched the TV show today where I was like, oh my God, get to the point.
Right.
I'm like, I know what's about to happen. Just rip out that necklace so I can get to it already.
Right.
You know what I'm talking about. But, like, so it was really the balance of just them getting the facts out and having that emotional moment was perfect.
Good.
And it was great, too, because she got to apologize to him, so he got the apology while he was always trying to apologize to her.
Right.
So that was the...
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the suggestion, I mean, I don't know if people, it might have been too subtle for the room, but I was hoping that the idea was that they almost, like, she almost just, like, destroyed them because they get so close. She's about to touch.
Yes.
Right. And so that was part of what I think where they, for just a split second, forget that they could just destroy both of them.
There was a moment of suspense I wasn't sure if they were going to.
Good. Okay. Well, that was the other thing we were balancing. So there's a lot to balance. But
all right. And the last major things are the fairies took Fen. looks like they took her, but ooh, might be more to it.
Those fairies are
and
terrifying.
Ancient ones are dragons.
Giant! Yeah. Oh my
that's
god.
Blowing up the world. Yes. I love when shows blow out the world.
Smog style.
You get a better understanding of what people are dealing with.
Any quick predictions? Because we have to wrap.
Oh.
Yes. Oh man.
I can't say anything. You go.
I know you can't.
She watched ahead for those of you who don't know.
These dragons are bad news, I think.
I'm so excited. Seeing the preview for next time. Are you excited when you see, like, the trailers?
Oh, yeah. I'm such a fanboy of the show, so I'm excited. Yeah. And because, you know, I left before they shot that, I'm curious to see what the dragon actually looks like. There's a nice glimpse of it in the promo, though.
Exactly. Yes. Here we go.
Yeah. I'm told it's awesome, so.
Well, it just keeps getting better and better. Anything else you're working on that you can let us know about or coming up?
Yeah, well, I, you know, working on a film that I'm writing and directing right now. Hopefully get that more information on that in a couple months. But yeah, I just directed the Shadowhunters winter finale, if anybody's watching Shadowhunters.
There you go.
So I was here a couple weeks ago for that. But nice. Yeah, just moving forward.
Hell yeah.
Hoping for a season 3 of The Magicians.
Yeah.
Right? Get the hashtag trend in.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming in. Let's go down the line and give our call out.
All right. I'm Adrian Snow. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Miss Adrian Snow.
Y'all can find me on all forms of social media at Ty Matthews PMA, as well as Monday nights on the Monday Night Raw after show. The crew will be at WrestleMania this weekend, so come see us.
Nice.
I'm Joshua Butler. You can find me at The Joshua Butler on pretty much most platforms except Snapchat, which I don't get.
That's all right. I don't really get it either. That's Facebook fair. And Instagram are trying to do the same thing, which I don't understand either.
Right. I saw that.
I don't appreciate it.
And my name is Carrie Lane. You can find me online at Carrie D Lane. And check out my Instagram and my Twitter because I'll post better photos of the Espionage Cosmetics nail wraps. They're really fun. And these are very glittery. And these are For Science is the name of them. So go check it out.
Nice.
I'll explain why. Again, thank you so much for watching. Give the video a thumbs up, 5 stars on iTunes. And we'll see you all next week. Bye.
Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.